All right, get ready, because today we're diving into a case that's legendary in contract law. R.E. Davis Chemical Corp. v. Diasonics, Inc. It's all about lost profits, second chances, and something called the lost volume seller.
It's really interesting.
Oh, I bet it is.
Yeah, what's fascinating is how it gets to the core of what a seller actually loses when a buyer backs out of a deal, especially when you're talking about a seller who could have made multiple sales.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. What happened?
Okay, so imagine it's 1984.
Okay.
Diasonics, they're making waves in the medical equipment world, right?
Yeah.
They agreed to sell this cutting-edge MRI machine to R.E. Davis Chemical Corp. for like a huge $1.5 million.
Wow.
Davis puts down a significant $300,000 deposit, and it seems like everything's, you know, smooth sailing.
So far, so good. Sounds pretty straightforward. What's the catch?
Well, here's where things get interesting. Davis ends up breaching the contract.
Oh.
But not because they suddenly decided they didn't want the MRI. It was actually because a third party, a company called Dobbin Valvasori, who were involved in a separate deal with Davis, they failed to build the medical facility where the MRI was supposed to go.
Oh, so a chain reaction kind of thing.
Exactly, a chain reaction.
That's rough for Davis. But wait, if Diasonics just resold the MRI for the same price, how are they claiming lost profits? Wouldn't they have broken even?
That's the key point.
Okay.
This is where the whole idea of a lost volume seller comes into play.
Right.
Diasonics argued that by losing the sale to Davis, they lost the chance to make another sale.
Oh, okay.
They could have sold two MRIs, not just one.
I see. So it's not just about replacing the lost sale, but it's about the lost opportunity to make two sales.
Precisely. And that's where a specific section of the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, comes in, section 2708.
Yeah.
Which deals with lost profits for sellers.
Okay.
This is different from the usual rules about resale damages, which just focus on the difference in the selling price.
So how does a seller prove they're a lost volume seller?
Mm.
It seems like a claim that could be, you know, easily abused.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. It's not a simple claim to make.
Yeah.
The court laid out a three-part test. First, the seller has to show they had the capacity to produce and sell both units. They couldn't have already been at their limit.
Makes sense.
Second, both sales would have to be profitable. No selling the second unit at a loss just to increase the damages.
Right, right. What's the third part?
The seller has to show it's likely they would have actually made that second sale if the first buyer hadn't backed out. It can't just be wishful thinking.
Okay, yeah.
They need to show they had a real shot at making that second sale.
So it's kind of like proving they had the means, the motive, and the opportunity.
You got it. And in this case, Diasonics actually managed to pass all three parts of the test.
Oh, wow.
They had the capacity to build another MRI. Their profit margins were healthy enough to make both sales worthwhile. And as own player in a competitive market, they were chasing every single sales lead they could find.
So the court agreed. They were a real lost volume seller. But how do they figure out the exact amount of those lost profits? We're talking about future sales that never even happened.
Well, Diasonics based their claim on projections of things like future service contracts and the costs of components, which came out to a substantial $453,050.
Wow.
And the court accepted this number. But there's another twist. Remember that $300,000 deposit Davis paid?
Yeah, the one they probably wanted back.
Exactly. Now, the contract included something for a $225,000 research grant, which Davis thought they could use to lower what they owed Diasonics.
Oh, so they were hoping for a discount.
Not quite. The court made it clear this grant wasn't a simple discount. To get it, Davis had to meet certain conditions, pay the full price for the MRI, and submit a research plan.
And since they breached?
They didn't meet those conditions, so no $225,000 credit for Davis. This really shows how important those contract conditions can be. They can have a huge impact on the final outcome.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this case wasn't just about lost profits. It was like a lesson in, you know, reading the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
But let's zoom out for a second. What does the Diasonics decision mean for, like, the big picture? What does it mean for other sellers?
Well, this case is a huge deal, right?
Okay.
It sets a precedent for how to handle those lost profit claims when a buyer breaches, especially for those who can show they're a lost volume seller. Before Diasonics, a lot of courts, they might have just looked at the resale price, and if you sold it for the same amount, they figured, you know, you're all good.
Yeah, but like we've seen, that misses the chance of making multiple sales, which is so important in a competitive market.
Right, exactly.
It's not just about getting back what you lost. It's about that missed opportunity.
Exactly. Think of it like, imagine you're a car dealership.
Okay.
And someone backs out of buying a really popular car.
Yeah.
You might resell that exact same car to someone else for the same price, but you've still lost the chance to sell two cars instead of just one.
That's a great way to put it. So, what can sellers do to protect themselves and be ready to make that lost volume seller claim if they need to?
Documentation, documentation, documentation. Keep super detailed records of everything, like your production capacity, how much you're selling, your profit margins, even your marketing stuff.
Yeah.
The more you can show that you were going after sales and could handle multiple orders, the stronger your case is going
to
be.
So it's not enough to just say, oh, I could have sold two of these.
Right.
You need, like, the receipts to back it up.
Exactly. Now let's flip things around and think about what buyers can learn from what happened to Davis.
Well, for me, it's got to be understanding your side of the contract and thinking about what could go wrong.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't really Davis's fault, they were still on the hook.
Absolutely. It reinforces the whole idea that contracts are serious business. You're bound by them. And about that $225,000 research grant, the way the court dealt with that was super interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't just a simple discount, right?
No, it wasn't. It depended on Davis doing certain things, which they couldn't because of the breach.
So it was less of a discount and more like a reward if they did what they promised.
Yeah, and those conditions, they really matter. It's a good reminder to read the fine print and make sure you totally get what you're signing up for.
Absolutely.
Another interesting thing here is how the court looked at different parts of the UCC, like sections 2706 and 2708-2.
Okay, can you break that down for us? What's the difference? I gotta admit, I'm a little fuzzy on those specifics.
Sure. Section 2706, that's about the usual resale damages, where you look at the difference between the original price and what you resold it for.
Okay.
But 2708-2, that's specifically for those lost volume sellers and lets them get back those lost profits, which can be way more money.
So it's like having two tools and you pick the right one for the job.
Exactly. Diasonics made it clear that sellers don't have to just use 2706 even if they resell the stuff. They can go for lost profits under 2708-2 if they fit the rules.
This is getting pretty complicated. What else should lawyers and law students think about when they're looking at this case? Like, what are some of the finer points that could be easy to miss?
One thing people often forget is how the case went through the courts. It wasn't a slam dunk. This case went back and forth between the district court and the Seventh Circuit.
So it wasn't a straight line to a decision?
Nope. The district court initially sided with Davis, but then the Seventh Circuit said, hold on, and sent it back, telling them to look at the damages again using that section 2708-2.
Interesting. So it wasn't just like applying the law. There was a lot of discussion and different ways of looking at things.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It shows how the legal system works through these tough business problems and how different courts can see the same thing in different ways.
So even though Diasonic set a precedent, using that lost volume seller idea in real life can still be tricky.
You got it. It's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Each case has its own facts and details, and courts have to carefully decide if that lost volume seller idea really applies. But Diasonics gives us a guide, a framework to think about it, and that's super valuable.
Totally. So as we wrap up our look at RE Davis Chemical Corp. v. Diasonics, Inc., what's the main thing you want listeners to take away? What should they remember about this case?
I think the most important thing is that this case shows us how important it is to be smart and think ahead, whether you're the buyer or the seller. For sellers, Diasonics is like a playbook for maybe getting more back if a buyer breaks the deal, especially if you can prove you're a lost volume seller. But for buyers, it's a wake-up call about what can happen if you break a contract, even if it's not your fault.
So knowledge is power, right?
Absolutely.
Understanding these contract law details, especially the UCC, can make a big difference in how things turn out.
Exactly.
It sounds like anyone who works with buying and selling, especially goods, really needs to know about this Diasonics case.
Oh, absolutely. It's a perfect example of how real life business deals can turn into like these huge legal fights.
Yeah.
And how courts try to balance things out between buyers and sellers.
So as we finish up this deep dive into this case, what's the one big takeaway you want our listeners to walk away with?
That's a good question. I think the most important thing is like thinking strategically. Really understanding your rights and what you're responsible for in any contract.
Whether you're buying or selling.
Exactly. For sellers, Diasonics shows how you can, like, maybe get more back if the buyer breaks the deal, especially if you can prove you're a lost volume seller.
Yeah.
But for buyers, it's a reminder to be aware of what could happen if you break a contract, even if it's not really your fault.
Totally. Knowing these contract law details, especially the UCC, can really make a difference.
It definitely can.
Okay, everyone. That's it for today. Our deep dive into lost volume sellers and the case that changed the game for lost profit claims.
It's a case that really makes you think.
Yeah, it does. If this deep dive piqued your interest, we encourage you to check out the full Diasonics decision yourself.
You might be surprised by what you find.
And speaking of surprises, here's something to think about as you go about your day. If you were the judge in this case, knowing what you know now about lost volume sellers and the UCC, how would you have ruled? What would have mattered most to you? Let us know what you think on social media. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on our next deep dive.